Hello, my friend. Jeff C. here with a great new resource that I put together just for you. It's a complete database of all the tools that I use to create content and run my business. I've got apps, software, hardware, and even my favorite AI tools. It's easy to find what you need and tells you exactly how I'm using them in my business. To get access to my toolbox, just go to jeffc.com/toolbox. That's J-E-F-F. S is in Sam, I-E-H. That's I before E, especially in C. That's how my mama had me learn it. So go check it out. And if you haven't heard me say it in a while, I appreciate you listening, my friend. And now, on with the episode.
Can you share a time when an interview didn't go as planned? And like, share with us how you navigated that situation.
Outside of right now? No, I'm sorry.
touche.
No.
And ouch. We're done.
Keeping you up to date on the world of social media. Industry experts, innovators, creators, storytellers, and the latest social media tools, tips, and tactics. This is Social Media News Live.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Social Media News Live. I'm Jeff C., and you're not.
And I'm Ian Ansergray, and this is the show that keeps you up to date on what's happening in the world of social media and more.
Have you ever wondered how the best podcasts manage to captivate their audience episode after episode? Maybe you're interested in discovering the strategies behind effective podcast interviews, or you're eager to transform your podcasting hobby into a professional and polished production. If that is you, then you are in for an amazing experience today. We're excited to host a guest who has mastered the art of podcasting. He's an expert in crafting compelling content and enhancing listener engagement. Andrew Mason will be sharing his experience, his approaches, and his essential tips for podcasting success. So sit back, clear your schedule, clear your mind, and get ready for this week's episode of Social Media News Live. Andrew, how are you doing today, my friend?
Oh my gosh, Jeff, I'm doing so well. I can't wait to hear what I have to say after that introduction. That sounds amazing.
There we go. Yeah, this is fun. Yeah, Andrew is a pro, so you guys take some notes because this is going to be really, really great.
Well, if you don't know Andrew, he has over hundreds of episodes. Andrew has a passion for amplifying messages that matter. He's a husband, father of three, and been the host and producer of many podcasts, including David Allen Company's Getting Things Done, the Omni Group's Omni Show, and the Pro Guide. He lives in Delaware, where dreams come true.
Hey, Andrew, thank you. Ian's breaking up. I think it's the underwater cables across from the UK, maybe, or a storm. But anyway, so glad that Andrew is here. But we're going to get started right away, but I want to do a shout out to our sponsor for the podcast. It is our friends over at Ecamm. You can find out more about them at ecamm.com/Jeff. Use code Jeff15 to get a 15% discount on your first order. But we're going to jump right into mastering podcast interviews. And so the first question, Andrew, like we're going to talking about the, you know, it's not just mastering, it's how to craft them. So how do you use, what strategies do you use to find the most effective way for identifying potential guests who have some, you know, like fresh insights to share? Because I know finding guests, if you're doing an interview show, can be a little bit difficult.
Yeah, that's a great question, Jeff. My gosh. I think that all of us have maybe, if you're thinking about starting a podcast at all of us have maybe that guest in mind that's like, my gosh, here's the moonshot. This is the person that I would love to interview one day, someday. For me, that person's John Maxwell. So John, if you're listening, I'm really interested in interviewing you at some point. But I think two things have really helped me. One is a concept that I call bloom where you're planted. And so, yeah, have that person in mind, have that moonshot guest in mind, who's the person that one day, someday, I'd love to interview them. But then start with where you are and start to think about, okay, with the stuff that I'm interested in, with the subject matter that I'm passionate about, who wants to be interviewed and who is interested in sharing what they have to offer? And in my mind, you can go a couple of different places to find people that kind of fit that category. Some successful plots or spots for me in the past have been Amazon's new release list. Oh. So somebody that has a book that's coming out, somebody that's thinking about releasing a book sometime in the future. Very often they're interested in traveling the PR circuit and they want to share what it is, you know, their message with the world. So finding people that are hungry to talk about what it is that they have to share with the world, I think is an excellent strategy. New and noteworthy within Apple's podcast. just kind of lurking around in there mm-hmm. a little bit. Mm-hmm. So often you're going to find people that have really interesting stuff to say, and they might not necessarily be like the guests, you know, mm-hmm. but starting with where you're at and then working toward where you want to be in terms of the guest selection, I think is a fabulous way. Number one, to get in the reps, because if you're starting a podcast from scratch, just that sense in which, you know, you're not going to be amazing at it at first mm-hmm. and you're going to make mistakes, you're going to mess up. That's part of it. And why not get desensitized by having all the reps in from the get-go, and just trusting the process that as you're interviewing guests, that you're moving forward, each conversation is moving you one step closer to where you want to be in terms of subject matter. So I think blooming where you're planted is one. And the other is the sense of, I call it widening circles or platform jumping. So starting with where you are and having guests on that maybe take you a step in the direction of where you want to be. So I know when we first started, it was just a tech interview show back in 2009. We just interviewed guests who happened to have some leg in the WordPress community. And slowly over time, that circle widened to people who happened to be in tech. And over a few more years, that widened into people who happened to be in business. And so as you widen those circles, different guests have credibility indicators that they use to decide whether or not being on your show would be a good fit. And when you can, you know, give other names that people would recognize or be like, oh, I know who that person is, mm-hmm. it suddenly becomes a switch in their head that says, yeah, you know, that sounds like a show I'd like to be on because I recognize these other voices in that community. And that doesn't happen if you just start there from the get-go.
Very interesting. Yeah. So I assume that you have like your white whale, like that you want to, you get, because I know I have like tiers. Like I always wanted to get Jay Baer. I was able to get him on this year. You know, Seth Godin for a lot of marketers is the one step, but like Eric Fisher has had him on like a couple of times, I think. And then he's trying to get like Jim Gaffigan, like, you know, celebrity Ooh. Stuff. So, I mean, so I guess you kind of have some stair steps that you go, like when you first start out, it may not be realistic if you're just like on episode one to get those tier guests. If you can, that's great. I was able to get Guy Kawasaki really early in my journey just because of people I knew. But, you know, I guess to kind of have realistic expectations of, you know, the guests that you can get when you're first starting out. Is that something you found too?
I think so. I also think being truly interested, you know, not looking, yeah, there is a long-term play that's happening here about like where you want to be, and you have in your mind, you know, who that guest, that magic guest might be. But really, truly being interested in the people that you're interviewing as well. So it's mm-hmm. not a sense like people can smell manipulation. People can right. smell, you know, right. when you're not being authentic with them. And so I'm truly here because I want to add value. You know, when people sense that, I think it makes for a better interview anyway.
That's great. Yeah. That's great advice. Ian, you had a question.
Yeah, that makes sense. So like, how much research do you typically conduct on a guest before you do the interview? And do you have any like go-to sources or methods with that?
From a technical standpoint, like when we're talking about nuts and bolts and going on, like there's not a standard process in terms of like Google stalking or, you know, Instagram lurking or anything right. like that. So that I don't really have a method for that. But if you're trying to really dig up on research for a potential guest, I think I look for one sort of thing. And then once I have an answer to that one thing, it becomes sort of a linchpin for where the rest of the show can possibly go in the future. And so for me, that one thing, if you have it, you know, it's going to be an amazing show. And then if you don't have it, you can have all the facts, all the research, you know what the person ate for breakfast when they were 10 years old and creep them out with that information on the show, like you right. do all that stuff, but it might not be a great show. Mm. And the one thing for me is what I call the seed of enthusiasm. And so mm-hmm. it's like you look for the content that's already on there. Do they have any content that's already on YouTube? And you listen to that, you know, the shtick, the TED Talk, the welcome video, and hear what it is that they're already passionate about. Is there something that they bring energy to that shows up in their conversations or in, you know, their bio, and find out what that one seed is? Because if you can revolve the questions around that seed, very often it's really, really difficult to get a miss. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's so easy to get the right, you know, the right interview questions across if you can find where it is that energy starts to flow, where that enthusiasm starts to show up. And so you can have a lot of prep or a little bit of prep, but when you keep in mind what about, you know, what it is that makes that, you know, guest kind of light up, it becomes that much easier, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things, and I always tease people that I say, like, yeah, this is, for me, it's free consulting. And I kind of joke about that, but it's also kind of true. Like, it's because it's people I find interesting, or I've seen, or a topic that I want to know about. And I know that they have either talked about it before or whatever. This is the thing. I usually don't have people who ask to be on my podcast. I don't usually have them on unless I've already either been on their show or that I've done something. Usually when people want to be on your show, there's an alternative, you know, there's a motive behind it. They want to pitch something to your audience, and I want to provide value to my audience. I don't want to have it be a sales thing. So my thing is just asking people, hey, would you like to be on? I thought I saw you on this. I think you'd be great. I'd love to learn more from you. It's that very organic kind of style of kind of interview, finding people to interview. Here's a great question by Robert Lee. And he goes, this is a pretty cool topic. He's watching over on LinkedIn. He says, this is not a repeat question, but what are some tools you find helpful when researching about your guests for your interview beyond like Google search? Are there any like tools? You mentioned that you go into, you know, the new and noteworthy on Apple. Are there any other places like, or tools that you use to kind of, is like Podmatch or something like that you use, any of those kind of things?
Yeah, I wish I could say that I did everything, you know, driven by AI and it was super easy. But honestly, it really is going in and doing the work for me. You've heard the person's name somewhere. You've read their book. I think that actually putting your eyeballs on their website or, you know, looking through their content, there's not really a super great replacement for that I found yet that mm-hmm. I fully trust. And so it really has been just like, you know, researching the person. Oh, they're saying cool stuff. There's content that's impacting me. I think you can find, if they have content that impacts yourself, then I think that's a good, you know, litmus test as to whether or not that's going to be something that, you know, your guests will find interesting as well. What about you guys? Do you have any thoughts about research assisting tools? That's interesting. I
think it's me seeing on my friend's show, because we have kind of a community, right, Ian? We have people on our show, yeah. And I'm like, hey, will you make an introduction to me? I do this all the time with Katie Brinkley, who's been on the show. She does a great podcast. And just getting that, like, I got Roger Wakefield, which you wouldn't think, he's this plumber who's blown up on YouTube, but he's a marketing guy. He's amazing. And I'm like, some people wouldn't have a plumber on their show, but I'm like, Roger is a genius. Like, what he has done, he's built an empire now. Home Depot and Lowe's are having him do deals. I'm just like, so, and I knew Roger back when, you know, I mean, I think that kind of stuff is fascinating to me. People like that. What about you, Ian? What, how do you find guests?
Yeah, it's all relationships, because I have it the other side where I get all these emails, as I'm sure you do, like the cold call emails, like, oh, I would be really interested on being on your podcast. I would give a lot of value to your audience.
Right.
Like, and they also say, oh, I'm a big fan of your podcast. And they obviously haven't listened to it. So like, that kind of thing doesn't work. So I think it's got to be, you got to be genuine. You can't fake it. So If you do want to be on someone's podcast, listen to the podcast, stalk them in a nice way and give value to them. And I think that's the only way that's going to make a difference. Mm-hmm. So I think you can't shortcut this. You can't automate it. It sounds like you can, but you just can't.
Right. People can tell.
I wish you could. Yeah, I wish you could. But I think coming from that abundance mentality that says, I'm here to give, I'm here to serve, and I don't want anything from you, I want something for you. You know, I don't know the words that make the difference between that. But I think people can sense that, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Totally agree. So this is a great tip from Gary. He goes, sometimes listening to past appearances can help you avoid guests who are not so good. And that's one of the things. I mean, there's some people that I've wanted to have, and I've done that. And I'm like, I noticed that they're not up to date on the tech that would make it possible for the live show. Now, I'm having way less problem with that after COVID, because everybody like had to do it for their job. Yes. They had to get some sort of webcam or something. So I don't have that much issue anymore. But yeah, it's a good idea. I've only had a couple of them when I went, oh, okay, this is going to be a rough one. But most of the time, it's not like that at all. So
There are a few times where the tech has been something to overcome, and I just wanted the guests so bad. They weren't used to podcasting. There was a sheep. She is a sheep herder in Utah, but happens to use, this was for the Omni show, happens to use OmniFocus and used it to run her sheep herding farm. And I just loved her story, loved hearing her communicate. Cool. And I was like, we sent her a Blue Yeti mic and just said, you know, if you can send it back when you're done, but yeah. You know, let her borrow the tech because it's worth that's having good. The interview. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
That's a great point. Yeah.
That's a great one. And it's an issue with, I think when you get out of the business and the marketing world and you go to I don't know what you would call it, the fringes, that's where you're so used to meeting people who've got great tech, and then you start to meet people who don't, but they have got such an amazing story to share, and sending them out a mic is such a great tip. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask a question about questions, because when it actually comes to the interview itself, how do you strike a balance between structured and open-ended questions so that you can allow, you know, for both informative and spontaneous responses? Because, you know, I think it's important to have a structure, but sometimes you just want to go off on a tangent, don't you?
That's so true. So true. Yeah. It's a fantastic question to think about too. Like, how much structure do you want to have in your conversation? And some of that might depend, I think, on how comfortable your guest is with kind of riffing on the fly. I so appreciate, Jeff, that you sent, you know, a couple of questions to Noodle on beforehand, because in my mind, it gave me a direction to take the conversation. But I feel like if somebody were to throw the opposite at you, if they threw the kitchen sink at you, you'd be able to answer a question pretty quickly because you're used to it. You're used to thinking on your feet. For me, as a rule, I like to send maybe 8 to 10 just open-ended questions, but really it springboards off of that seed of enthusiasm that I was mentioning earlier. I want to make sure that the questions are geared around something that would maybe bring some light and energy into their eyes, and something that they get excited and lit up about. And so it might not necessarily even be in their, you know, elevator pitch, their shtick, you know, the thing that they're known for, but you can see they're really excited about talking about it. So if they want to talk about their dog, like, let's throw a question in there about that for sure. Mm-hmm. I think something that helps with that is those 8 to 10 questions don't feel so overstructured, but like you were saying, Ian, they give you the groundwork that if the conversation really goes off the rails, we're all talking about burritos that we had for dinner and we need to bring it back real fast, you know? So just look at the next question in the list. You know, you have this kind of framework, this sequence that helps guide you along the conversation. But in the moment, I think you'll be able to tell when the conversation's happening. In the moment, if you see them excited, they're bringing their energy, they're bringing their passion to a certain subject that was maybe triggered by one of those structured questions, and you feel something that just scratches a little bit deeper show up for you, ask the question, because that's right. I feel like that's where the magic shows up, you know?
Right.
Absolutely.
So it's funny that, and this is Robert has another great question over LinkedIn. He goes, out of curiosity for everyone, do you prefer prepared questions versus organic questions coming from the convo on the day of the show? Now, this is really interesting to me because this is more of a controversial topic than I thought of. Like, even on Leap last week, Doc was saying, no, never send questions, make it all things, really organic. And Lou Mangiello, my friend Lou Mangiello, who does the WDW radio podcast, same way. He thinks no questions. He prepares, he really researches his guests, but he just doesn't do questions. I come from the thing is, like, I've had people so nervous to be on the show for the first time that they need that structure. And so we do the structure all the time. And I say, if you don't want to look at the questions, don't look at them. So this is a really kind of controversial thing between podcasters and live video people. And you kind of go a halfway kind of thing. You only give like 8 and then kind of go maybe off of that. So does it really, I guess it's what you feel comfortable with. What are you guys' thoughts? You know, Andrew, I mean, you have the 8 questions. Do you give more if they ask, or how do you handle that?
Usually if I send the 8 questions, I'll get an email response that says, that's fabulous. Thank you so much. These are thoughtful. Love it. I'll be ready. And that's the end of it. For the 10% that say, hey, can you dive a little bit deeper? I'll actually ask the question after those 8 questions. Also, is there anything that I didn't ask that you'd love to talk about? Because very often, you know, somebody has just this new thing that I haven't heard of, even though I've researched them, that they're like so jazzed about that, man, that's going to make the show if they talk about it. So asking, giving them the space to be able to have that conversation. And then this is a little bit of a cheat code for post-production, you know, versus live. But if you've had the interview, re-asking that again, because very often they'll be riffing on something halfway through the show, get sidetracked by the next question.
Right.
And kind of make a little mental bookmark in their head thinking like, man, I would have loved to have talked about that, and say, okay, like, now that the conversation's over, before I hit stop on recording this thing, is there anything that I didn't ask about that you wanted to be asked? Or is there anything that, man, if I just gave you 5 more minutes or asked you about that, it would just, you know, send you off in a different tangent? And sometimes I'll get some really great stuff from that because they had the conversation, it sparked, you know, the ignited the imagination a little bit and put them in state and they're ready to riff on something. And it wasn't anything that any of us had planned for.
Yeah, that's a guy has learned that technique, is that he'll say, what did you want me to ask that I did not ask? And that gets him some great stuff. Now, it's kind of hard to do on a live format. I've done it a couple of times, but it does get some of those things out. So we got the comments are going fast and furious. This is from my daughter, actually. She goes, how can you get some deeper responses from your guests rather than the sort of canned answers they've given to other people before? Do you have some tips on framing good questions? One of the things that always jazzes podcasters and interviewers is when somebody you're interviewing goes, you know, no one's ever asked me that question before. You're like, yes, that's what I wanted. So how do you find those things or, you know, like craft, I mean, like framing those questions to get those responses? Because you don't, like you said before, you don't want to shock them. Like, yeah, I remember you had a dog that died, you know, when you were a kid, and let's talk about that. You don't want to do that kind of stuff. But
very true.
How do you find those things like that can people go, because you want to have that. You want to have that exclusivity for your show. So is there any tips or hacks that you have for that, Andrew?
Yeah, this is so meta, Jeff, but it's exactly what we're talking about right now. The structure of the question that you just set me up for, you did a couple of really respectful things for me right now in the moment, which is what I would suggest anybody do if they're going through this. And this isn't to butter you up, but let's break this down a little bit. You took some time to talk through what it was that you were looking for. And in the structure of your question, you gave some backstory, you gave some context from where you were coming from. So you're kind of building a little bit of a verbal bridge here. And then you're giving a couple of like possibilities for where they could take the answer in the question itself. And so you're not offering the answer for them, but you're giving the guests some time to speak or to think while you're talking. And then you're giving 3 or 4 kind of conversational bridge, all, you know, diving board jump off points right there for them to take the answer. And I think when you do that, it gives them an idea for how they can assist you in creating really good content. And if you can do that in the moment, that's, you know, again, that is where the magic shows up. For me, very often it happens in the sequence of structure. Question, it gets them rolling. Unstructured question, that's where the magic shows up.
That's really, I love that framework. I really do. One more question from Robert. This is great, Robert. Thank you. Keep him coming. He goes, a belated follow-up for everyone. Out of curiosity, how often do people approach you to appear as guests versus you seeking out a person XYZ to appear on your show? And do you have an anecdote to share for the first time to say, hey, I would love to come on as a guest? Like, what do you tell those people when they, you maybe not want, you don't want to hurt their feelings, but you're like, yeah, you're not ready, kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I lean in toward what Ian was saying a little bit. So some emails you get, it just feels mass produced and I feel the freedom not to answer those. So it's just like, you know what? I feel like they just sent this email to 300 people and I'm probably one of them. So I'm not going to go ahead and give myself the open loop of having to complete that and respond to them. For people that I really feel like, hey, they are interested in the show, and they're, for whatever reason, curious to be interviewed, then I'll give them the due diligence of looking them up. Hey, maybe this is, you know, their second or third interview and they're trying to gain some traction. And I'd love it if somebody did that for me, you know, when I was first starting off, and they did. Mm-hmm. So being that for them is okay. But if you look in there and you really see, you know what, this is not necessarily a fit for whatever reason, for communication reasons, for experience reasons, or just a fit for your show. You know, I can't remember if it's David Heinemeier Hansen, somebody from 37 Signal said, you know what? You don't always have to give, I mean, you can be kind and give a reason, but you don't have to give a reason. You don't owe the person an explanation for why they're not showing up on your show. So I believe in kindness, but no is a perfectly acceptable answer as well.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah. That's good advice. That's good advice, because I probably overthink the response sometimes to that. Can you share a time when an interview didn't go as planned, and like share with us how you navigated that situation?
Outside of right now? No. I'm sorry.
yeah, touche.
No.
Ouch. And we're done.
No, thank you. No. Yeah, so many, too many to count. My gosh. I think one of my favorites was I was having, and this was back when Skype, you know, was amazing. So it was like 2011, 2012. And a moonshot interview for me was Mike Nelson. His name is Mike Nelson. He was the actor on Mystery Science Theater 3000. Yes, and I love that show.
Yes.
Where they make fun of the movies. And it's for whatever reason, I you know, reached out to the PR people and they said he'd be on the show, and it was a short call. He had to be somewhere. And halfway through the call, everything, and he's in the middle of a fantastic story, like his energy's there and he's getting to the crescendo of the story, and the call just, you know, drops.
Oh, no.
And I'm in, you know, I'm in rural Delaware. So it's like, you know, it takes us about 7 or 8 minutes to get things going again. And it's a really difficult ask to tell somebody like, hey, I know you were just really excited and that was really draining the last 8 minutes of us trying to pull this thing back together and get you back, you know, get the pull the momentum back together and stuff. But can you act as excited as you were just then so I can make this happen and show up again? And he did great. And, you know, the podcast pulled together, and that's the beauty of post-production is you can, you know, say something as if you were interjecting in the moment and then, you know, bring the rest of his question or, you know, the rest of his answer back in. But having so many of those things happen, at first it's like, oh, this is the worst thing in the world that could ever happen. The world is ending. And then you realize, no, it's not. Yeah. No, it's not. There's so many times that can happen that it's almost like a desensitization process. At first, it really, really hurts. And then over time, you're like, you know what, we're going to figure it out. And actually, it's super freeing. You know, it gives you that space to kind of reconnect with why am I here in the first place? You know, who? I had one guest that I didn't realize this was a person that was a, back when tech TV was like a thing, they were a pundit on tech TV. I admired them. I had them on the show. And I didn't realize that they actually had flipped the tables and they were live streaming and they had me on their show. And oh, that was not a pretty thing at all. They were not making fun of me, but they were kind of having some light at the situation. And it's, you know, over time, you realize that the worst thing that could ever happen, if it happens, it's not the end of the world. And if you truly enjoy doing it, you just keep going. I mean, that's it. Tech stuff's going to show up. You know, bad guests are going to show up and you can decide what to do after having them on. And you're still here. That's how resilience happens.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm going to do a plug for Ian's podcast. I had one of those things as well. And I told that story on a recent episode of Ian's podcast about one of my first live streams. It's actually when I had Guy Kawasaki on for the first time and some bad things happened. So you'll have to go and listen to that show. Is it the Confident Live show? Is that what it is, Ian?
Yeah, Confident Live, yeah.
Yeah, so go check that one out. A little plug there. One of the questions you mentioned, and I loved your kind of the way you plan out your show where you have structured questions, then you have them answer, and then you have like an unstructured question, and then that's kind of where the magic happens. So I want to talk about that a little bit more, about the tips you have for creating some space in your interviews for making those kind of things happen. Because, I mean, we've all had those guests before where, and this kind of goes back to like the worst thing could happen, where it's like they're giving you one word answers or they're, yes. And it feels like you're just pulling everything out of them. You're like, and they say yes. You're like, okay, can you tell me more about that, please? And it's, you know, it's so... How do you create space for those magic moments? And then, you know, kind of on the back of that, like when you have those struggles of like people aren't giving you the answers that you need, what do you do?
Yeah. I think there's no replacement for, and I think I mentioned this earlier about being truly, truly curious about what it is that the guest has to say. So if you're truly curious, there's also a seat of commitment back there too. You know, I'm committed to bringing out the best in you. It's not like a firehouse, you know, fire rescue where you're pulling somebody out of a building, but it's like, you know, even at your own expense, I'm going to do my best to ask the right questions that bring the right information out, because we both care about, you know, creating a good show and having the right content show up. And so sometimes that might be an uncomfortable question. Very often it's just truly, truly being curious about what the person is answering and saying in the moment, and digging that just that little extra bit deeper to think like, okay, you know, so why is that? I think some catch-all questions that have showed up for me that I've relied on where it felt like, man, I really am, you know, trying to pull teeth here, and they're just either having a bad day, they were up till 3 with their kids, the energy's not there for whatever reason. There's some universal questions that can really start to create some great content for them. Like, tell me what you're passionate about. I mean, it's so open-ended, but they can take it anywhere. And, you know, hopefully they're excited about what they're passionate about, because if they're not, tell me about we don't have to call it a failure, but tell me about a misstep that's happened in your life that if somebody were to go through your same career path, you would say, you know what, just skip that section of it. And, you know, you're the wiser for it. You know, tell me about just something that you're excited about right now. Having just a few, 3 or 4 open-ended catch-all questions, I think that's kind of the safety net for when the acrobatics happen and you're like, okay, this will keep us all from crashing and burning if we ask one of these.
Yeah. So Before we move on from crafting these engaging questions, I want to ask, are there, other than yourself, like, where could somebody go and say, okay, that you like look up to as a great interviewer? Like, you need, you go like, okay, go to these podcasts because this guy knows how to interview, or this lady knows how to interview. Do you have some favorite people that you kind of hold up as mentors for asking great interview questions?
Wow. I think rather than, I can give you two people maybe, but rather than these two people, you'll hear a great question show up from multiple individuals, and it'll just kind of like, oh, I need to ask that. That's a really good question. A buddy of mine who hasn't been podcasting for maybe 2 or 3 years had a great question about, you know, what were you like when you were 10, and just open-ended enough that it really gets somebody to kind of start digging back and, you know, uncovering some thoughts that they hadn't had in a while. I mean, that's one I'll bring out every so often. But mentors or people that I would consider mentors from a distance, there's one person that really inspired me, and he was less podcast, but more interview, just in live environments. His name was Ken Coleman, and he actually has kind of climbed the ranks over at Ramsey Solutions. And I don't know if he's like second or third in command for Dave Ramsey, but he'll like show up on Dave Ramsey's show every so often. And knew of him back in 2008, 2009, when he was just kind of doing live conference questions. And he really just had some well thought out questions that he was present, you know, with the guest in a way that you don't see a whole lot of people being present with. And that, I think, level of intensity sometimes is unsettling for people that aren't used to it. But for very often, many people are like, man, I've got a real person on the other side of this conversation. Right. And they'll respect that and want to honor that. So he really brought that to interviewing. I've really been interested in that. Another is just a life mentor, David Bullard, not on any platforms, not on any podcasts. Amazing guy who lived in New York, lived in Delaware for 7 or 8 years and helped teach me a bunch of stuff about truly being authentically curious and not trying to put on airs or become like the, you know, whatever the Ty Lopez's or Grant Cardone's of the world where you pose by the Lambo. Like, just be yourself. People are truly interested in you. And sometimes it's difficult to come up with, be okay with that. You know, there's some soul searching that shows up where it's like, hey, I need to be okay with being me first before I actually have a conversation or question.
That's a great point. This is some from Gary. He goes, Swisher is a pro. I also really like Mark Maron. I like to go, I'm so old, but I like to go, I can't remember what's one of those three, like Pluto TV or whatever, but they've got like Johnny Carson shows, like just running all the time. And I love how he weaves humor into his questions and asks questions of guests. So I like those old school kind of interview guys and the way they do it. And so I learn a lot from them. And Gary says, he had his own style, but I love watching the Actor Studio host, James Lipton. Yes, he's another great one.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's, what is your favorite curse word? Yeah, I remember that. And then Kira has, and so we're going to move on to this next section about optimizing your podcast production, because Andrew's really great at this. But in that vein, the amazing Kira had a question. These are awesome insights. She goes, do you leverage any tools like Podmatch to find people outside of your network to be part of your show? Would love to hear any feedback on platforms like that. There's a couple different ones. Podmatch is a great one. Sanfilippo is his last name. I think it's Alex Sanfilippo is the one who runs it. Very, very well done. Great stuff. What are your thoughts on like those Podmatching services? Have you used any? Would you ever consider? Or especially for people who, I guess, are starting out, would you maybe suggest those?
Yeah, I would consider it. I mean, if something new comes out, I'm open to new technology, new ways of searching. I think for starters, if you're just kind of getting your feet wet, there is no replacement for your network as it exists right now. You know, who are your friends? And even that second degree, a great tip that our mutual friend Ryan Coral taught me was, you know, the second degree LinkedIn search, you know, type in the word podcast for friends of, or, you know, second degrees off of your connections and see who shows up and then maybe ask for an introduction there. I mean, that's a great way to go about it. So don't use the excuse of needing a new tool keep you from getting started, I think is what I'm saying.
That's a great point. Yeah. Use your network, because then and it also makes you more comfortable. You're not nervous for it's almost like a blind date. Like some of those pod matches, you've got to do your due diligence because you just don't know what's going to happen. Like Ian, I was like, I don't know. He looks a little strange and he has a funny accent, but I'm going to get him on the show because he's highly recommended. So, and then look what happened. So yeah, I think that's a good point. Start with your network first. And then as you grow, if you're wanting to get more guests, I think that's a great idea for Podmatch. Kira, thanks for that question.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask a question about maintaining high production values. You know, I think many of us, that's really important when producing a podcast. What are the kind of key considerations that we should be keeping in mind in order to maintain that high production value?
Ian, oh my gosh, it's hard to boil down. Honestly, it's hard to boil down. But I think, you know, when I was thinking about this, maybe three factors kind of come into play for me. And there are other, I'm sure, but I kind of think of it as like this three-way balance, this triangle balance. And I think there's a person's comfortability with the technology. I think there's their current level of self-consciousness or nervousness in the moment. And then I think there's the perception, you can't get an accurate read on this, but your current perception of their level of patience with you and with whatever else they've got going on in the moment. And I think each one of those affects the others. And so like if a person's highly uncomfortable with tech, but also really highly impatient, you know what? There's a little buzz in the background, but we're just going to move forward because I want you to have more in the tank for the interview. And if it's not a deal breaker, like, yeah, you need that minimum effective, like, level of tech to be working for us to record in the first place. But like, don't be nitpicky with that person on the three-way balance. If they're super patient, but they're also like really, really self-conscious, or the tech's not working just yet, but you know, like they have a level of patience with you, then like, yeah, let's spend a little bit of time. I'm going to sit here and tell you about like, hey, we don't produce junk. This is going to be an awesome show. You know, you can relax, spend some time level setting with that person, letting them know, you know, what's going to happen down the pipeline. And then if they're patient and they're not nervous and you know, they are tech savvy, then, you know, by all means, my gosh, let's make it a perfect show. You know, let's spend time tweaking the mics and making sure that this thing's sounding good. But I feel like we got to meet people where they are in that balance and have grace for everything not to be 100% perfect in one of those spaces so that they have more to give, because it affects, you know, downstream the rest of the conversation. And you don't want to drain them dry like right before, you know, you get going.
Yeah, very, very true. And by the way, I was thinking of this, you know, you talked about being gracious and help, you know, kind of helping each other out as you're getting started. I would love it if you guys, we got all sorts of people who are just starting a podcast, people who are pros at podcasting like Gary Stockton and Jim Fuse and Chris Stone, I know is going to watch this, who are pros. I would love for you guys to drop in your live show or your podcast, wherever you're watching from, and tell us what your show's about. And maybe some of this organic, like, you know, having people on your shows can happen in our community. So feel free to do that wherever you're watching from. You have my permission to do that. Drop it in there because I think it'd be great. One of the things, and I'm so fascinated with this as an editor, because both you and I have been editing for a long time. How do you decide what stays and what gets cut post-production? You mentioned sometimes switching things around to make it clearer, like if somebody goes off on a tangent and then comes back with that story. How do you know what stays and what gets cut? I kind of asked this of Dave Jackson, who's another pro, and I'm fascinated by people's editing process. So how do you do it, Andrew?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jeff. My gosh, I think that it is determined on... I think it's determined on, for the tech stuff, you know, if there's a flub, if somebody drops out and you want to be able to like cut that space, if you can do it without affecting the overall story arc of the interview, then by all means, you know, let it go. That's an easy chop. If the person starts rambling or answering a question that maybe you didn't even ask, so you're like, I asked question A, they're really passionate and they didn't hear question A and they're asking right. question B, yeah. like, you know, sometimes that happens too. It's a little bit of a cheat code when you're your own editor and producer, but you know, being able to go back in and re-record the question that asks what they answered, like right. Do that. You know, of course, that helps make things more coherent for the audience. There's like this one liner that is so good. My gosh, it stuck with me. Our wedding photographer gave us, me and my wife have been together for 11 years. When we got married, our wedding photographer was taking our pictures and then he turned around and showed me kind of what he saw through the LCD or lens on the camera after he took a couple of our pictures. And I'm like, my gosh. I said, Keith, this is amazing. Like I'm here in the moment and that looks better than the actual moment. Of like, how in the world did you do this? And he said a line to me that just completely stuck with me for the last decade. He said, I kind of see it as my job not to preserve the actual event as it happens sequentially, but it's my job to preserve the spirit of the event. And I'm like, oh, that's so good. That is so good, Keith. Gosh. And so, you know, it might mean removing some things and remixing the conversation in a way that it didn't actually happen, but you're preserving the spirit of the event when you're doing it in post-production. And that makes for a better quality product for people.
That's awesome. But just, I got to mention this because it's changed the way I edit. So I edit a lot of the podcasts in Descript. Descript has this new tool called Regenerate. And a lot of times guests will flub a word. Or they'll drop off something, or there'll be a mic bonk or something. Regenerate will actually use AI to you fix that flub, and like the mispronunciation of a word, it'll catch it that it's the right way, but they'll say it wrong, and you make your guest sound better than they were, just like you were saying. Okay. You know, it's like it's the spirit of what they're saying. And if you can make a guest saying like, man, I didn't know I sounded that intelligent on the show, it's like, well, I use Regenerate.
Oh, you didn't actually.
I don't say so. That. Yeah. So, but it's a great tool to do that, because your whole goal as an interviewee is trying to get those guests to look the best they can. Like, you're not, at least for me, I'm not trying to catch them or trip them up or like get an aha moment. Like, I gotcha. It's more of a like, oh, you are so smart, that's why you're on my show. And so I think stuff like that, where you can make them and polish them up even better, is really, really cool. So I just wanted to kind of say that aside.
Yeah,
100%.
I mean, you can even do this eye contact thing. Have you played around with that?
Yeah, I do. It's
just about really, to say that. Yep.
Yeah, it's really cool. It can get a little creepy. Like, you don't blink for an hour and a half on your show. That might be a little too much. But yeah, it's pretty cool too. Yeah, it's really, really great.
Yeah. Well, so you mentioned the benefits of redos for non-live sessions. Mm-hmm. So can you expand on this? How this flexibility enhances the final product?
Yeah, I mean, redos, I think it kind of goes into what we were just saying a little bit with the sense in that if somebody doesn't answer the way that you think that they should, or they start going off on that tangent, you're able to really kind of help assist them. I think what Jeff was saying too, I mean, there are so many cool tools available to us now. You mentioned Descript. I know 11 Labs, that's been out for a little while too. My gosh, you can take 30 seconds and right. have them give an answer. You know, there's so many cool things that are at our disposal now. And in terms of post-production as well, the quality of being able to do, you know, the single checkbox. I know Descript has the studio sound, you know, or Adobe's Audio Enhance. You know, I think everybody's kind of throwing those around because it's so easy to use, but it's an easy win, you know, especially, and yeah, you got to be careful about like how much or little you give it, because you don't want them sounding like they're coming out of the Matrix with like the digital voice artifact stuff, you know, but a little bit, you know, actually really does help the quality of that. But I think the freedom of having a redo, to get back to that, I think is puts some guests at ease, knowing that there's no way that they can go wrong. Like, if I'm a new guest and I'm really uncomfortable about being on your show, and I know that I have the benefit of being able to restate something in a way that maybe makes more sense or sounds more coherent, or if I, you know, cough or sneeze or something like that, we can do that over again. It takes so much pressure off. Now, it doesn't take all the pressure off. Some people, like you said, Jeff, are just so crazy nervous that it's like, you know, you gotta do everything you can to help them along. But I think that's one of those factors that if they know that that box is checked, they don't have to worry about whether or not they sound perfect. And I think we put so much pressure on ourselves to be perfect at first. Mm-hmm. And it's just the difference between, you know, you don't need a masterpiece, even in post-production, hit publish. Yeah. So sometimes it's just like, we're trying to make the Mona Lisa, and it's like, this isn't a work of art as much as it is a conversation. And if I want to keep the conversation going, then I need to hit publish.
Yeah. So what do you have any tips for guest like comfort? You mentioned, you know, trying to make them feel good, especially when you're first getting started out for podcasting. I mean, it's kind of a soft skill that you develop. Like, I have people show up at least 10 minutes before the show. We kind of talk a little bit. They know that I'm not out to get them. I kind of give them like, hey, this is what we're doing. You're going to go full screen. We're still here. I usually tell people that, you know, like, don't freak out and that kind of stuff. Do you have any other tips that you give to help like guests feel comfortable during the interview? Because that's, I think, really a key thing.
Yeah, I think just being friendly. Like you were saying, you know, people don't, as long as they feel like you're not out to get them, you know, the gotcha, like even saying out loud, and you've done this too, Jeff, is this is not a gotcha podcast. I'm here to help, you know, make us both look good. Both of our reputations are on the line. So there's no possibility in which you're going to sound like junk in this. Either it doesn't get released if, you know, all heck breaks loose, you know, or, but there's no world that exists in which you don't look good in this. I think, and then being, just, I lean way back into that authenticity too, where it's like, I really do care about you. I really do. Like, I'm here listening to what you have to say because I care and this moment matters. And I want to share that with other people. When people can focus on that, it gives them that freedom, I think, from ego to worry about how do I look, what do I sound like, and get into what it is that they're really there and passionate about sharing about. I think the quicker we can transition them into that space, the better. And those were some really good tactical things that you just mentioned, Jeff, about, hey, this is what you look like when you're full screen. You know, right. This is what you sound like right now. Like having that desensitization show up first so that there's not like a scary, like, oh, shoot, like I'm live. There's the red light, you know?
Yeah, right. I used to actually turn off the red light when I would go to people, because you could toggle that off, because they would go, okay, I'm ready now. And I'm like, well, we've been filming for, you know, 10 minutes. So, because that's when you usually get the best, you get to their most relaxed. And yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I'm just, yeah, we've been filming. I would turn off that red light because I got the best answers. Real quick. Oh, this is great from Kira. She goes, redos put interviewers at ease too. Jeff literally saved our broadcast because we had technical glitches. Not only was he to redo questions, but he brought in Ecamm to save the day. Yeah, we were having some issues with something. And Kira's a great interview. She does a great job interviewing people. And so we just switched over. It wasn't that big of a deal, but it was fun. But it does give me a perfect segue into our show sponsor, which is Ecamm, because they are amazing. They are what make this show possible. Ecamm.com/Jeff. They're amazing people. Make sure you check out the community on Facebook and Discord as well. Ecamm.com/Jeff. Save 15% by using the code Jeff15 on your first purchase. One last question, because we're getting, man, see, like I said, Andrew, we would get to all these questions.
You warned me. Yep.
Because I love this stuff. What are some common like production pitfalls that emerge that, you know, first time podcast people or producers should avoid, like things that if I could go back and tell myself when I first started podcasting, this is what would have saved me a lot of time.
I think if this is the first time that you're kind of diving into like, I want to have a platform, I want to have an audience, I want to share stories, and it's fresh to you, being okay with not being Tim Ferriss, or being okay with not being, you know, whoever that person is that's the best that you think out there. You know, we mentioned the painting, you know, the canvas versus the conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, don't overproduce it to the point that it just takes so much time. And this has been a really hard let go for me, because, you know, 17, 18 years in video production, I want to make it look perfect. And it's a personal struggle for me to say, you know what, this is good enough. Not another person is going to look at that one time that person coughed. I got to let it go, yeah. You know? And, you know, it's having the control released to say, I'm here. And you mentioned this, I think it was a show or two ago, about, you know, acknowledgement. You know, I'm here to have a conversation with you. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have the content show up in order for the conversation to occur. So I would say, lean into conversation versus canvas, lean into producing, and just be okay with the fact that over time, what you've created the last 3 years, if you're improving, is going to be embarrassing. And that's okay. Yeah. You know, like, I think we all look back to something that was done a decade ago, and not just in terms of quality, is it HD or not, but like, man, like that was rough. And you'll delete that. Maybe you'll take it offline, but let's, you know, I think
if you go back, shorter the beard, the worse the production value is usually what happens. Yeah, that's the way I measure it. So, yeah, I totally agree. So, Ian, let's go with a final question, because I want to do one of the sections we did, and then we'll move on. So.
Yeah, no, well, this is something that I'm spending a lot of time on at the moment. I'm not the greatest short form vertical video lover in the world, but I'm spending a lot of time thinking about it, because a lot of people are. And so like, when you're, well, you know, how do you choose which segments of your podcast to transform into short form content, like Reels or YouTube Shorts? Because there's a lot to choose from. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah. In post-production, I'm sure this can happen in a live environment too. Jeff's probably ticking off moments where, you know, there was a mic drop moment somewhere, either for the guest. Hopefully we've said something of value here today, but there's a mic drop moment, either from the guest, a soundbite, something that shows up where it was personally impactful to Jeff or Ian. And they're like, oh man, you know, I need to go back to that. I think take personal note of those as they show up. If you go back through the show when you're editing, you're going to hear, I usually start with the end and work backwards. And I don't know if that's the best way to do it or not, but like, hear like the punchline. If the punchline's an amazing punchline to just a 30 second, you know, 40 second segment, that might be a good candidate. I think AI is pretty decent at finding, you know, the one liner or two, but this is an area I'm still getting experience in too. You know, I'm doing the thing, you know, just kind of like we're saying, it's a conversation, putting in the reps every single day. And I was talking to a buddy of mine. He is running reels that are just mind-blowingly good and seeing a lot of traction. And I'm like, what are you doing that's different? And he said, I feel like it needs an amazing hook at the beginning. So something that just, you know, is a one-liner that captures people's attention. And then if I'm bored, even for just like 1 second, I will cut it out. Like I am ruthless about cutting out for attention span so that these reels are full watchers. And he's like, and my litmus test was my mom. I actually watched my mom scrolling through Instagram and saw how little thought she gave to whether or not she would scroll past something. And so I think we have to kind of get over ourselves to thinking like, oh, here's the masterpiece again. Like, no, they're probably going to scroll through that if you don't cut out every single second. That's right. Really, really boring, you know? So yeah. Thoughts from you guys though. I'd love to hear your tips too.
So my thing is, I think it's a whole new way to storytell. It's a struggle. And you mentioned you've been doing video editing and podcast editing for such a long time. That's what I cut my teeth on too. It's a new skill set. It's really hard. You know, we griped about having to go to vertical video, but it's even harder to tell a story in under 30 seconds or a minute on YouTube and keep them, like you said, going. So it's almost like multiple hooks. You have that hook at the beginning to get them to stop, and then you can't stop. And there is this trend now that it's not so much what they call, and what is it called? Engagement editing, where there are all these cuts and jumps and da da da. People are getting tired of that. They want authentic. So I think it's a mixture now of getting that hook and then keeping them with authenticity, but also keeping them engaged, which is a hard thing to do. That's why you see so many of the ones that are funny cat videos, or there's a prank, you know, TikTok thing, or something that shocks you at the beginning and you finish to watch to the end. So it's kind of hard to do for an interview show. So you've got to really, like you said, have a heavy hand and chop those up. But it can lead, I think, to people watching they're going, oh, that was really interesting. I want to hear what Andrew had to say more about this because this was really good. I'm going to go watch the full video or listen to the full podcast. So that's what I think. Ian, what are your thoughts on this? I know you're kind of, I don't like shorts, but I know you're dabbling. Is that a word in the UK?
Yeah, well, but you have to differentiate between what you like and what consumers like. And like I'm not into TikTok or reels, but like loads of people are. So, and if you are wanting to expand your audience, you have to do this. I think that's where I've got to, I think. But the landscape is constantly changing. You know, TikTok before, and it was like 10 second videos, and then they wanted a minute, and now they're trying to get you to do longer, so like up to 10 minutes. And we're in this kind of really interesting period of time where like we've been told that we should do really ultra short, ultra processed stuff, which I think we should definitely be doing, but we should also be thinking about the more raw, authentic stuff, particularly as AI becomes more ubiquitous and takes over the world and all that kind of stuff. We know, I actually think longer form as well. So maybe like 3-4 minutes. Experiment, and that's the thing. You've got to try these things and work out what's going to be right for you and your audience. And what's right now may not be right in a month's time.
That's right.
Just got to keep experimenting.
That is very, very true. We've got some great comments, first of all, from Gary Stockton. He goes, I like it when George B. Thomas, who's another, I need to get him on the show, says on the Marketing Profs podcaster, did you hear that, listeners? Let's wind that back. So I think that's a great way to engage people, have a hook. And he also says, and this is super smart, Gary, I do the same thing. He goes, I try to standardize 60 seconds max so it works on TikTok reels and shorts. Yes, you bet. Repurposing, baby, that's the way to do it. And this, I think, is from earlier. So maybe Maurice is watching earlier. He goes, I keep getting asked by guests to get the questions before the interview. They want a hard list. I don't vary from, I prefer flowing unscripted interviews, though. What should I do? This, you guys tell me if I'm wrong. I would give the guests what they want, is because you're trying to make them as comfortable as possible. Thoughts, Ian? I'll go with you, and then we'll wind up with Andrew.
Yeah, the one thing you do, you have to think about your guests and making them comfortable. But I think you also need to learn to be more intuitive. So hopefully, like as you go through the interview, you can tell whether you are able to ask another question and it's almost like asking a question without them even realizing it, that you're deviating from what's on the page and they haven't even realized it. I think you need to, keep looking at them and making them feel comfortable.
Andrew, what about you?
Exactly what Ian said. The only thing I would add is if you've ever read Pitch Anything, the idea of prizing, you know, I think now's not probably the time for prizing, to acting like, hey, if you want to be on my show, this is what you got to do. Now's the time to serve the guest. And, you know, like Ian and both of you said, just give them what they want.
Yeah. Thanks for that question, Maurice. I hope that answered your question. And thank you, the amazing audience, for all the great questions you had today. I appreciate you guys more than you know. Ian Anderson Gray, where can people find out more about you?
My website is iag.me. You can follow me on all the socials. I have scattered myself pretty much everywhere, so it'd be great to chat.
And you've got a podcast too as well, that's a new one. So talk about your Smart ADHD podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a new podcast called the Smart ADHD Podcast. It's for smart creatives and entrepreneurs who are navigating their lives with ADHD. And we look at interviewing guests, experts, and also creatives with ADHD, looking for smart strategies to help. So yeah, it's been great fun.
Awesome. Andrew Mason, thank you so much for so much great content today. There were so many. I can't wait to repurpose this one. This is going to have a ton of stuff in it. You just have to chop it up. It'll be hard to have a heavy hand. But where can people find out more about you, your services, and all the stuff that you have going on?
Yeah, all the socials is great. As Ian said, if you head to YouTube, type in The Pro Guide, all one word, podcast. That's my show. And we do interviews with thought leaders in business, technology, creativity, and productivity. And if you're interested in podcast editing and that sort of a thing, my business is smallpond.productions. That's me.
Awesome. This has been such a good show. Guys, don't forget about our sponsors, Ecamm. Even Ian's, I mean, not Ian. Oh, what was it? Oh, Gary says he cannot live. Oh, yeah. He can't do a podcast without Ecamm. So what a great testimonial. You can find out more about Ecamm at ecamm.com/Jeff. Do not forget about the amazing toolbox that I have right now. You can find out that at jeffc.com/toolbox. Totally free. It's everything I use, all my equipment, gear, AI tools, all the stuff. jeffc.com/toolbox. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, everybody, for today. We will see you guys next week. Bye, everybody.
Social Media News Live.